Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm so excited tonight because
I am too.
I love our guest.
And she's everywhere, and I'm kind of shocked we've never had her on the show before.
She's on the radio, though.
That's true.
So she's kind of like, you know, our sibling on KMUN.
I was going to say she's better than us, but you are a professional. I am not. So
we're colleagues on the radio.
She's better than me. I don't know which one of you two is better.
Well, we have Norma Hernandez here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. This sounds amazing to be here with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she is better than me.
Oh,
yeah, she is.
I can't wait to chat with you because you, we'll get through our business really fast, but you are the epitome of somebody coming into this community and just embracing it and getting involved. And I'm always stunned at people that say, well, it's the town's not welcoming. I'm like, it is if you get out there and do things. And you do. You're everywhere.
I'm everywhere.
You really are
yes.
everywhere. You've always
been
everywhere.
Yeah, like a bad penny.
No.
Or a lucky penny. Lucky penny.
All right. So let's get to it because it's
yes.
pretty good.
All right. I have a word of the day. This is an old word, historic words, lost words that we're bringing back. This one's an adjective.
Oh, uh-oh.
Waggish.
Waggish. And I usually guess first so that you can appear smarter when you guess. Waggish.
Waggish.
It's an adjective.
Oh.
I believe, say it again.
Waggish.
Waggish. I think that's somebody, it's to be slow.
Ooh, like sluggish.
Yeah, sluggish.
Nope, you're wrong.
I'm totally wrong. All right.
Yep. Waggish.
Waggish for me comes like from wag. So it would be like movement, like having some swing.
Ooh, that's good.
Oh, nope, you're wrong too. So it's a mischievously humorous. Silly in a facetious way. Waggish.
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 Yeah. But I like, it's kind of fun though.
That is a fun word.
Yeah.
That could come back. We could work on that.
I know.
That could,
like, you know, like sometimes we have a little waggish personality, you know?
Yeah.
I like that
waggish.
One. Okay.
All right. So did you want
and this Wednesday, I did want to say it's the kickoff to the Seaside Farmers Market. So this market is in the parking lot of the old Broadway Middle School. So right there at Sunset Empire Parks and Rec in their parking lot, right there on the corner of Broadway and 101. And it's from 2 to 6, and it's going to be every Wednesday through September 18th. Providence Seaside Hospital is one of the main sponsors.
Of course they are.
but it's a tiny market, but they do have fresh food and produce, along with arts and crafts, and then they usually have a food truck or two, too. Oh, and live music. Always live music.
Always live music.
Always live music.
Yeah.
All right.
So kind of a fun one. I like it. I like just because the size seems very doable in that time frame. So Wednesdays, 2 to 6.
I applaud farmers because I could never be a farmer.
Yes, that's true. I could not either.
Me neither.
But I love their food.
Too much like hard work.
Yeah, right.
All right. So let's get to the big history highlights because I want to get to Norma here. So these are things that happen tomorrow, June 17th. So as always, icebreakers at work or at the pub, at the bar, or if you happen to be on Jeopardy.
Okay.
If you are on Jeopardy, if you win any money in a trivia contest, you need to give us half. All right, if these are any of the answers.
Sure.
So on this day in 1579, Sir Francis Drake claims California for England.
There you go. Yeah.
So that seems kind of presumptuous.
Yes.
All right. So I wonder how the people that were living there felt about it. All right. In 1579, though, early. Let's see, 1755, future explorer James Cook, who comes up here all the time. We talk about him often somehow. James Cook joins the Royal Navy as an able-bodied seaman in Wapping, East London.
Okay.
So Captain Cook, circle the world.
Yeah.
And going to get shot by Hawaiians. But he joins in 1755. 1775, the Battle of Bunker Hill begins. British General Thomas Gage lands his troops on the Charlestown Peninsula overlooking Boston and leads them against Breed's Hill. It's actually Breed's Hill, not Bunker Hill.
Oh,
but somehow
interesting.
Bunker Hill was more prominent, and somehow that's how people remembered it. But it was really Breed's Hill nearby. It was a fortified American position just below Bunker Hill. And the reason I like this one, besides that it was a little significant, as the British advanced in columns against the Americans, American Colonel William Prescott reportedly told his men, "Don't one of you fire until you see the whites of their eyes."
Oh, my gosh.
That's where that phrase begins, because they didn't have as much ammunition. So he wanted to make sure, like, if you're going
to
shoot,
be frugal with it.
You use it, make it count.
It's easier said than done, I would think, though.
And they actually had to retreat when they ran out of ammunition, and the British kept coming. But don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes. All right, 1885, Statue of Liberty arrives in New York Harbor. I love the Statue of Liberty. Have we been?
Yes, we have.
Did you climb? Did you go up to the top?
No.
Oh. Did you go to the island?
Yes.
Okay.
I have not. No.
Okay. I went once as a kid, and it was really crowded, and I didn't like climbing up. So after that, anytime I'd have friends and I wanted to take them to New York City, we'd just get on the Staten Island Ferry, and I'd say, take a picture from here.
Yeah.
So I think I cheated my guests and visitors. But you get a good view from the Staten Island Ferry.
You do. You really do.
If you're in the statue, you're not seeing the statue anyways, right?
Well, you get to the island. And you
that's true.
And then you go inside. So
that's true. But when you're in it.
Yeah. All right. That was almost going to be my history highlight of the day. But 1972, Watergate burglars are arrested. Ooh, bad move. 1994.
And we thought that was so shocking.
Yeah, it was shocking once upon a time. How we have changed.
Oh, pish posh.
1994, O.J. Simpson leads the L.A. police on a low-speed chase. And we had a show about this.
One of my favorite podcasts, because here in Clatsop County lives the motorcycle state trooper who was assigned to the window outside of where O.J. was sitting in the Bronco.
The back right.
Yep. And he has, left? I don't remember, but it's the pictures on his mantle because it was a slow speed chase. And truly, he just would look in and he saw the man sitting there. And
there he is. He was on TV for an hour and a half. He was on the TV.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. Right. So go back and find that podcast. We'll share it out again. But it is a fun one because he's got some interesting stories.
And that wasn't the only story. That was
no.
I mean, he had a lot of prominent stories. But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history, and I am open to debate if either one of you wants to argue one of the other things or if I missed something. But 1950, the first kidney transplant. In Chicago, kidney transplant.
And was it successful? Probably not, right? Or
I don't know, but it starts the whole process. And as a guy with one kidney who may someday need a kidney, I'm saying this is important.
Yeah.
So did I miss anything?
In Chicago. No.
Okay. Now we know.
And I didn't miss anything?
No.
Wow. All right.
I think because I made way for Norma. We have Norma Hernandez, folks. So plenty to talk about. All right. Mac and I are just going to leave and let you have the show.
I was going to say, we could just, all right, go and just walk out and you could fill the show perfectly. So, it'd be just as good as if we were here.
But we're
going to
start with the beginning. So Norma, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Puerto Rico, in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I was raised also there. I lived there until I was 21, and like every good Puerto Rican, I moved to New York, the biggest Puerto Rican town, and I lived in New York for 5 years. I went to Lehman College, and I was living with my uncle and working for my uncle in property management. He had all these buildings all over the city, and then, which I believe that was University of Life, property management in New York City, it is the University of Life, what I think everything that I know, I learned at that time. And then I moved to Boston. My sister was there with her kids, and I was in Boston for 15 years.
Wow, wow. Right.
And I said, I will never leave Boston. I love that city. So when you were talking about Bunker, you're like, oh.
So you knew all that.
not quite. I didn't know about the Brit Hill.
Okay.
But I love Boston. I think it's just an amazing city, and the food, it is amazing. And it was a little bit harsh for something sometimes in race, but still was a fantastic city that I hold very dear. And I said, I'm never moving. And especially after I fell in snow, because, you know, they say that if you fall in the snow, you never leave that city.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell and I'm like, okay, I'm never leaving. And then I came to visit Astoria in December 2002. Went to a Christmas party. I got him offer a job. I went an interview, left January 3rd, moved here February 6th, a month later. And that's it. And the rest is history. And the rest,
oh my gosh.
I'm an historian.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at this point, you're an historian.
I am an historian. But
we got to back up.
But just the move initially from Puerto Rico to New York, I mean, and then even Boston too. I mean, Puerto Rico, we're talking tropical, right? I mean, beaches to New York. That's huge. That's a huge transition, especially as a 21-year-old. I mean, right?
Yeah.
So you said it was like a sort of a life lesson.
It was a life lesson, and it was the best. I think every young person in their early 20s. She lived in New York for several years before they do anything in the world.
Interesting.
Before you live in any other place, before you decide, just go live in New York. Several years, you know, minimum of 2, maximum of 5. Mm-hmm. But go and do it because you want to learn some things that are not in no textbooks, no college. Nowhere in the world is going to teach you what that cultural part of being in a big city is and how you fit or do not fit in.
Yeah.
So where in New York did you live, and property management, what kinds of properties and where were they located?
They were located in Upper Manhattan, like Washington Heights, and in the Bronx in South Apache. And our office was in South Apache. So it was very interesting for me at the time. So like, okay, I seen these streets in that movie, and now I'm working here, you know? And you will go in and you put all these things. But yeah, he had like 17 different buildings. And the smallest one had maybe, I don't know, like 100 apartments. They were huge.
Oh my gosh.
They were huge. And all my uncle, that was my mom's youngest brother, and all his kids were working for him. 4 girls and 1 boy, and they all worked there. And then I came in, and you also get to learn how to do that. And you got to get your real estate license, and you have to do all these things. And I'm like, but the funniest story is how I got used to English. I should be embarrassed, but I think it's hilarious. But when I got there, his wife, my aunt, said, you're not allowed to read anything in Spanish, Spanish music, nothing what Spanish to be, because you got to really get immersed with the English. And I'm like, my God, you know, it's just, you're just coming. And you know a little bit, but not just to be thrown. And her oldest daughter, her second oldest daughter, said to me, oh, I got it. Here, she will give me books of Danielle Steele, books, like all these smart books, all these Danielle Steeles with a little dictionary. And I'm like, really? She's like, well, what it is simple English. And because it's simple true. English, yeah. And you're going to start getting all the concepts of conversation and how to really compose a paragraph and have a conversation, this is the best way that is going to give you the vocabulary and the base for you to really get comfortable with English. And it was just
and
like
lots that. Of exciting adjectives.
I know. It's like, boy, I learned a lot of stuff there. With
so did you speak
idea.
Any English before you?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, because in Puerto Rico, you have to do both.
That's what I kind of thought. I took a few trips to Puerto Rico, San Juan mostly, when mm-hmm. I was a kid, 2 trips. And I before we went on the air, I talked about my terribleness in Spanish. I failed it in 8th grade and then did miserably at college. And I'm amazed that people that speak 2 languages or more, but I went to Puerto Rico and had no problem. I mean, people were very quick to
help me. They will try to really make you feel comfortable.
Okay. I find that interesting that, so in Puerto Rico, because you're an American citizen, just part of the public education is that it's bilingual, because we were talking about this too. So why isn't it here? Why isn't that more widespread? Or even just because I lived in Florida too, why isn't it more widespread in Florida where there's so many people?
And especially Puerto Rico, they tell you we have 2 official languages, Spanish and English. Right. It's 2 official. When you really look into United States, we have no official language here.
And then to have that as education, as formal education. You know, at that
since you're in kindergarten, you are taking things in both languages. Like I always remember, like my math books were in English.
Oh.
And I'm like, really, math? But that's the way it was. It was just very interesting that a lot of the stuff was always in both languages. So you grew up just, you know, and you grew up being very good about reading closed caption, because you go to the movies and it's all the closed captions. So I think that also helps you to get those definitions and to hear pronunciations, because you're constantly reading. So that's what I said. People now, when they want to learn Spanish, I said, well, get Netflix. Whatever movie, but put the closed captions and the sound in Spanish. So that way you can start reading some words and you pretty much well know what is happening. So it helps you figure it out.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to start somewhere, Mac.
Yeah.
This is it, Netflix.
I'm too long gone. So talk about New York City a little bit, just culturally, things, you're a young woman in away from home. Even though you have relatives maybe watching you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're in the biggest, most wonderful city in the world, and you have everything at your feet. So what kinds of things did you enjoy, or what craziness did you get involved in? Or
for me, still is even like if I am driving from the from upstate, from the Washington Heights, if I'm going down on the West Side Highway, for me, still that's the more iconic drive down, not so much the East Side. And I see pictures of the West Side Highway in Manhattan, and I look up, and it just gives me something. It's just like, oh, my God. But what I thought about it, it was like it was so much freedom that I thought that I could go sideways real fast. Yeah. And I was good about acknowledging that. I'm like, I have to be careful. I was just going to work. And on a weekend, sometimes, you know, a Thursday night, because it was a good dance night on Thursday night. I don't know why. But then I will get to the house, and it was 5:30 in the morning, and there's my uncle coming down. Oh, you're ready? I said, no, I have to change.
Yeah.
And it would just be me and my cousins just changing real quick to go to work.
Yeah.
And he's like, were you guys out? No, we were here. So it was just that kind of a thing. But I started missing really my own family, like my sister and my three nephews, and my two nephews and one niece. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Boston. And then she has like, oh, I have a guy here for you. And I'm like, okay, that piqued interest. So that was part of the reason. But when I went there, then I actually worked for many years. For 6 years, I worked with the New England Aquarium in Boston. So I went it was just exciting times in Boston. Mm-hmm. And now Boston, I see it, and it's like, oh, my God, I see the Charles River. And I see these pictures, and it's like, oh, this is what I, you know, will do this. Or people love Cape Cod, but not me. I would like to go Rockaway. I would like to go north by Cape Ann, because for me it was better, and having fried lobster. And, you know, it was just all those other stuff that it's like my Boston is a little bit different than for other people.
So if you're going to take us to New York City and Boston, but you can only take us to three places in each city, where are you taking us?
Wow. And actually in New York, I have great memories of the Cloisters that was in Washington Heights. And to go there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, we were just there just on the summertime because it was so gorgeous and beautiful. And you can see the Washington Bridge from the Cloisters. And that was just magical at that time. And Washington Square, just to the Washington Park in the Village, you know, that was another place that it was just like amazing for me to be. And of course, the West Side Highway. It's like I will drive that West Side Highway and on and maybe go across the river and to Binghamton and just look towards the city. That was a big deal because my uncle lived in New Jersey. He lived in Teaneck. We were like the Puerto Rican family that lives in the Jewish town, you know. So, oh, we blend so well. Oh, really? We blend not at all. But yeah, that's where he lived the whole time that he was there. He lived in Teaneck, New Jersey. So it was just that, and that it would be for me New York. That's for me. West Side Highway is New York, and when I go to Boston, oh, that one I have so much more places. One of my favorite things was just go to the Cambridge side and from Mass Avenue and just sit there and walk the river walk looking towards the city. That was my favorite thing to do. And also in going to Charlestown and look towards the harbor, towards Boston. I like to look at probably cities from outside looking in. And I really, really disliked Brooklyn at that time because I would always get lost. I don't know what he had Brooklyn that I could never figure it out how to get in and how to get out. Okay. I will get in and I'm like, I'm going to get out of here. It will take me forever. But Boston, I will say, yeah, just looking at that city and going in. And I used to live in the South End, which is the same neighborhood that the Cathedral of the Holy Cross is. And at that time, I was very involved in the Catholic Church. And my neighborhood was one that had Asians, Puerto Ricans, the gay community, and African-Americans. And it was beautiful. We never really had any issues. We never really had that discord. So it was just like amazing. And out of my bedroom door, out of my bedroom window, I just can look out and I'm going to see the cathedral right there. That's what it was like. My backyard was looking at the cathedral, like the front entrance. And I'm like, wow, this is a magical place that I live in. So I don't think it's that kind of, I had that kind of an apartment in a brownstone that it was like what you see in movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's the hardwood floors and it's just the stairs and you have these awesome bay windows and you look just what you see in a movie. So that was my life in Boston. I think that's why it was like, you open the shades in the back and it's like, oh my God, I'm looking at the front entrance of the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. And
oh my gosh.
It was just that amazing. So that for me, yeah.
So New York City, Boston, and then Astoria, Oregon.
I know.
So talk about, you mentioned briefly, but what was it about Astoria that drew you and why did you want to move here and stay here?
I came to visit a couple that we all worked together at the New England Aquarium. Oh, and that's how I met them. And they were my closest friends. And they moved here. He had a job with OSU Extension Program, Sea Grant. So I came to visit them. I had like a free ticket or something from an airline. And I called one of my sisters, the one that lived in Puerto Rico. I said, oh, you want to go to Astoria? And she actually said a bad word, like, where the is that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, somewhere in Oregon. And she's like, where is that? I said, I don't know either, but let's go. You know, and she had never been like Christmas outside of Puerto Rico. She's like, what? I said, it rains a lot, but it's not as cold. Like, my friend was like, don't come now. You know, it rains a lot. And like, what is the temperature? She says 40s and like heat wave. And that days in Boston was like 10 degrees. I'm like, I don't care if it's raining.
Yeah.
I don't have to shovel it. For me, always is, oh, I don't have to shovel it. I'm there. So I came and I don't know what it is. You know, I remember walking around the old Safeway in downtown and the Skip Hawks Hockey's supermarket there. Yeah. I remember walking there and shopping there and just walking to people and people were like so nice to me. Yeah. That's what it was. And I'm like, oh my God, are they want to take this back to the car for me? Like I had not seen customer service for like 20 years. You know, New York and Boston, really they're awesome cities, but it's not really customer service there. And just to come here and people wanted like, oh, do you want me to take that to your car? And usually our answer was like, do you need a break? Do you want to go out? Is that what it is? You know, because we were shocked, my friend and her husband and I. And we went to Fred Meyer's one day and my sister all of a sudden say, hi, how are you to this lady? And that it was behind us. And all of a sudden we pay and my sister's still talking to this lady. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? And I'm like, Hilda, what was that? And she's like, I just said, how are you?
Oh.
And that's my friend, Lisa, said, just say hi.
Yeah.
Because they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you. Because like forever. So it was very interesting that I will then time out that if I want to do something fast, probably it was not going to get done. But what annoyed me about it is what I loved about it. You know, annoyed me that the post office, it was only open at 8:30 to 5. That for me was just like, how are people supposed to function? It will bother me every once in a while that I will go to a restaurant, to a store, and it's not gone fishing.
Yeah.
Because it was the Springer season or something. Yeah. And I'm like,
clam tide or something. Yeah.
And I'm like, what way of doing business? And then I realized, this is a living. This is what I like about it. So exactly what annoyed me is what attracted me to it. Because it's like, yeah, why do we have to have a 24-hour post office? And why do we have to be open until 7 o'clock? And all these things when it's just like, no. People are having a life. And for me, that was the best thing ever, just to have a life here.
I would love to spend another hour and a half talking about New York City versus here.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure you talk about the place that you work and the important work that you do. And we've got about 4 minutes left, so that's not enough time, but you got 4 minutes. Tell us
about
your work.
And before you start, because I know you're going to just go into it, but also what sort of, because I think you've also really hung in or gone with your passion, and your passion is in social services.
Yes.
Right. So I just heard your story didn't start in social services.
No.
And yet this is where this has been your life here in that. So talk to me about how you discovered that in yourself and then what led you to your current position.
And actually it was when I got offered that job, and it was in a cannery. I didn't know what a cannery was. And it was to do their human resource and office and to be the office manager. So when I'm there and they hire me, because all the staff was Latino, they didn't have anybody in management that spoke Spanish. They offered me that job, I'll take it. And that's when I realized that I needed to help more than just to be an office manager or making sure that your payroll is done. That's when I realized, when they kept coming to me, asking me all these different questions about they needed help. And can you help me with this paperwork, what this letter said? And that's what did it. So, the company was Goose Point Oysters in Bay Center, Washington. And that's when I realized, and I worked with them for 4 years, and I went to public health, and then I was doing home visiting, and then I went to Consejo Hispano. I worked with them for 4 years. I went back to public health for 11 and a half, and then I went back to Consejo, because Consejo is really where my heart is. This is an organization. Let me help Latinos. Let me help you and guide you. What do you need to do? How do you need to do it? It's not that I'm going to do it for you. I want to teach you how to really be integrated, be successful. Let me help you and the kids. So it is just what my heart is with Consejo Hispano. So I think now in my last several years of working that get to retire, maybe in several years, at least I'm doing something that I absolutely adore and enjoy, and is working with Latinos directly.
And being in public health, I mean, that was such a great position too, because where you are now, you know the ins and outs too, right? Yeah. I mean, you've learned that language of how to connect people to different resources.
Yes.
What is it about Consejo Hispano that just really provides that glue to help support these families to get the resources that they need?
It is that that's us. We've been there. It means that our staff has been there, have been going through certain situations in their life, that they were able to overcome it. They were able to say, okay, this is how it's done. That we have Latinos working for Latinos. Nobody else understands that better. It's not like somebody coming from Portland saying, you know what you should do? No, it's just somebody like, you know, I used to live in Seaside. This is what happened to me. This is what happened with my siblings. And this is what I want to just really work on to take to the next step. And to help the families really have that generational wealth and education and financial stability, and just really help them and push them.
I love it. Yeah. You yourself are such a great resource for our community. We can listen to your radio program on KMUN. When does yours air?
Mine is always the second Thursday of every month.
Okay.
8:30 at night, Sonitos, Ritmo Latino.
And she sends out calendar reminders, which we need to do, because you have to be reminded to be ready to dance.
That's right.
Yes.
But thank you. We're so glad you were able to join us. And thank you for being an advocate in our community and that resource for families to support them with their basic living needs.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we say this, but we really do need to bring her back.
I know. We love Norma.
We have a lot more stuff to talk about.
We do. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.